This podcast is produced and managed by Kangaroo Fern Media Lab, Australia's independent video and podcast company. We do the podcasting hard bits so you don't have to. We make podcasts easy. Book a call at www.kangaroofern.com. www.kangaroofern.com. This podcast is produced and managed by Kangaroo Fern Media Lab, Australia's independent video and podcast company. We do the podcasting hard bits so you don't have to. We make podcasts easy. Book a call at www.kangaroofern.com. www.kangaroofern.com.
A Guerrilla Podcast Syndicate Production.
Hi guys, I'm so excited to have all of you join me today. Today's episode is all about changing for the better. With me is Alistair Mordy, a former drug addict turned founder of the biggest drug rehabilitation center in Thailand, The Cabin. He talks about overcoming his difficult battle with addiction and becoming a light for those who have initially lost their way. He continues to help others win in their personal battles against addiction through his newest venture, Alpha Sober Living, an online counseling service, and Sober House. Before I begin, I would like to thank my podcast management group, Kangaroo Fern Media Lab, and my producer, Jamie, for this wonderful opportunity to share this inspiring conversation to the rest of the world. Excited? Let's start the show.
This podcast is brought to you by Guerrilla Podcast Syndicate, powered by Kangaroo Fern Media Lab. Kangaroo Fern is Australia's independent video and podcast management agency with the mission to help individuals and entrepreneurs to start their own podcast and harness the power of podcasting. Book now via www.kangaroofern.com. A feel-good podcast filled with beautiful thought-provoking reflections.
What is it in your life that you want to become? Who do you want to be?
And inspiring soulful stories to help you become your authentic, unapologetic, grandest version of yourself. Your own hashtag. Best me ever.
You begin to ask yourself why. You find yourself lonely, depressed, feeling unworthy, unloved, doubting yourself, and asking this question. Why me? Why did it have to happen to me?
Hosted by Global Master Coach and international best-selling author, Mike Sellis.
Hi there, Alistair. How have you been?
Great. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So where are you right now?
I'm in Chiang Mai, Thailand, where I'm based. Yeah, I've been here for about 11 years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how's everything there as of the moment?
Soft lockdown, suffering the same as everybody else is. Most of what I do is online, so haven't been too affected. But yeah, same as everywhere else, really.
Good to know that you're doing great despite everything that's happening around you. But hey, that's the way it is. When I first read your story, I was immediately interested and I was hoping and praying that everyone else would agree with me, and I'm so glad they did. Walk me through your story while you were growing up, Alistair. So how was your childhood like?
Obviously, I'm in recovery from addiction. That's how I came to be an addictions counselor and to set up rehabs and all the things that I've done. But my childhood was not the worst, but it certainly wasn't the best. And it's probably something most people could identify with in some way. You know, I was brought up in England in a single parent family. We were Catholic to boot. And in the 1970s, that was somewhat stigmatized for your mother to be divorced and so on. So I grew up in a small rural community that was fairly judgmental. No brothers, no dad, no uncle, so no male influences around, I suppose. And by the time I was in my teens, yeah, I did what people often do that come from those kinds of backgrounds is that I found my own male mentors, and they weren't particularly good ones, and got involved in quite a lot of crime and misadventure and drug use and so on. So my youth was misspent youth, I suppose you could say. And it took me until I was 28 to get out of that cycle.
You said that you had a lot of misadventures. Could you share like some of them with us? Because I know that a lot of people right now who might be listening to you can actually relate to whatever you've been through before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, by the time I was probably 9 or 10, my behavior was well off the rails. So just to give an example, something I've written about to a fair extent, I think I was about 10 when the police first hauled me in, and that was for arson. So I managed to burn down about 20 acres of farmland.
So that Whoa.
Give you some idea of the kind of how off the rails I was.
Intentionally?
Yeah. I mean, perhaps,
oh, wow.
Perhaps not the entire 20 acres, but yeah, we fully intended to start a fire. Yeah, absolutely. By the time I was 18, I was living in Manchester, which is a fairly rough city. I was addicted to heroin, addicted to crack cocaine, and all of the stuff that goes with that. Some of which is probably too graphic to talk about, frankly, but plenty of violence, plenty of offending behavior, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And at 20, I was probably quite a formidable individual, and the crew that I ran with were. By 28, I was 9 stone, and a female security guard could have arrested me without a problem. I was that physically destroyed by the addiction. So I went from being an alpha male on the wrong track to being a very, very hopeless kind of addict, you know, nothing more than that. And so I often talk to people about complex people sometimes take a long time to grow up. It's not necessarily a bad sign if you're in your mid-20s and you're still lost. It might mean that you're quite a complex person. And I think that's how it was with me. And I certainly didn't grow up until I was 28. And I think this is common now, is we are kind of infantilized for a long time, much longer than we used to be. We used to have to grow up a lot quicker. And so I had a lot of catching up to do by the time I got into my late 20s, which, to be fair, I have done. And that, I suppose, is what led me to specialize in working with people in their 20s and early 30s, was helping them to make that leap. People who failed to launch is what we call it in therapy, you know. So young people that have failed to launch, but they have got potential. Well, that's exactly what I was like. So that's why I do the work that I do.
I am just curious because I know for a fact that our parents and our immediate environment while growing up played a huge role in how we are at present. With all the things that you've been through before, how did your mom or your dad take it, or your family take it? Because it's not easy, you know, getting arrested for arson at age 9 or 10. How did they take it?
Well, my mother was very strict. And the good influence in my life, I would say. She was very aspirational. She's highly intelligent. And she was obviously not very happy with that and continued to keep the pressure up. She was not a liberal parent. My dad was more off the rails himself, more like me, but strangely more liberal. He would laugh about things like that, which is actually, I mean, I'm not knocking him. He did the best with the tools that he had, but that is not helpful. If anybody's confused about that, that is not helpful. You know, you need boundaries when you're a kid. And I suppose to answer your question, I got it from my mother, but I didn't get it from my father. So a bit of a mixed message. Perhaps the worser aspects of me were tempted then to listen to my father, who obviously didn't live with us, but I would see him maybe twice a year. And perhaps I was allowed, therefore, to think he might be right. Whereas if they both had the same message, this is not correct, as my mother did, then maybe it would have had an effect. Maybe not. Maybe my peer influences were too strong and I wouldn't have listened to either of them. Because what a lot of people don't realize is the peer influence is shown to be very strong indeed. So, for example, we think of our parents as being the main influence, and parents will like to hear this if their son or daughter is addicted. Listen, if you were, say, an immigrant to America and you're an Indian family and you're second generation, say you're a girl, and your parents still speak with a heavy Indian accent, but as you're growing up, of course you won't. You'll speak with an American accent. Why? is because your school and your peer group exert much more influence on you. The culture that you're currently living in that situation, exerts more influence on you even than your parents do. Right, so the daughter might not want to wear a sari or the traditional dress because she wants to identify with Americans because she was born in America. So we often think parents are these huge things, and they are, the earlier you go back, that's certainly true, obviously, for an infant or a toddler, then parents are the influence. But as you get older, peer group do exert a massive influence on you. So there's just something interesting to think about, yeah.
What was going through your mind while you were in that rebellious stage of yours growing up?
I think I was thinking, if you want the honest truth, and I think this might ring true for a lot of people, I think I was looking for an adventure. I think I wanted more. People talk about childhood trauma and adversity and things like that as causing addiction, which they do. They're strongly linked to addiction. But the other side of it is that a lot of young people, not just young men, are looking for something more challenging than what they're being presented with by society. And certainly in the West, society for a lot of people can be relatively comfortable and relatively unchallenging, perhaps, to what it would have been historically. Historically, our environment was very adverse. You know, and historically, yes, we did drink alcohol and things like that, but addiction epidemics don't appear to have been that common in history. It's a modern thing. And I think that part of that is to do with extremely adventurous and perhaps quite talented young people perhaps aren't challenged enough, and they are seeking, they're actually seeking adversity, danger and adventure. But perhaps instead of joining the army or doing something that's more constructive or going abroad to work in a peace corps or something like that and do charity work, something that's dangerous and challenging and exciting, they just take a wrong route and take an easy route to adventure, which would be crime, misadventure, drugs, things like that. So I think it's our failure to engage young people with a challenging enough life, actually, on top of things like adversity, divorce, bereavement, all the adversities and traumas that we associate with addiction. I think it's a little bit more complex than that. And I think it's because our society is not really engaging its young people properly.
You've experienced a lot, Alistair. And I'm sure that the listeners right now are quite curious. What is the biggest misconception that most people have about addiction? How did you go about your own journey? How did you start? What got you hooked? Right. And what was the turning point that actually led you to become the person that you are now?
Yeah, I can answer that quite easily. I mean, obviously, I've worked in the addiction treatment industry for 20 years. I run my own rehab. I continue to run rehab projects and things like that. So I've seen an awful lot of addicted people from an awful lot of cultures. And when I started working, I worked on street outreach in North London. So I was literally peeling, injecting drug users and street drinkers off the street and putting them into housing and into rehab. So that was the very poorest people in society. And then I went to run a high-end private treatment center in Thailand, which is the other end of the spectrum. So you've got celebrities, athletes, CEOs, elite soldiers, politicians, God knows what. So I've seen from the bottom to the top. And the current understanding of addiction is that it is informed mostly by childhood trauma. And I would challenge that. I would say, yes, the link is very strong between childhood trauma and addiction. So if you have experienced something like, there are 10 classic adverse childhood experiences. This has been researched by the Center for Disease Control in America. So those are things like having a parent in prison, having a parent with mental health issues, abuse, neglect, or abandonment. And those can be divided into physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, and so on. So you have 10 adverse childhood experiences. And the more of those that you have, the more likely you are to be addicted when you're an adult. And if you've had 9 of them, then you'll be a more serious addict than me, because I've only had 4 of them. So it's literally quantifiable. But I say, hold on. Yeah, there's a strong link between that and addiction, but a link is only a link, it's not a cause. What is causing those adversities? Well, it's things like where we're at as a society, okay? So we are much more anonymous than we used to be. We used to live in small villages and so on, and we had more community and things like that. So is it actually the state that our society's in that's partly causing the childhood traumas and adversities, right, that then causes addiction. So people draw a direct link between, let's say, a difficult childhood and being an addict as an adult. But I say, hang on, go back one step further. And let's look at the fact that modern society is great in so many ways. You know, we've got medicines for diseases and things that we didn't used to have. One of the things that's not good about modern society is we're more isolated from each other. We perhaps don't do that much for our personal growth sometimes, or we don't have that much community and so on. And those things are potentially adding to unhappiness in childhood. So for example, it's much more common to get divorced. Well, that is, you know, we as adults might think, well, good, because it would have been the case back in the day when if I was unhappy in my marriage, I had to stay in it, right? So as an adult, I'm happy with that. The progress, I'm happy with the social progress, but from a child's perspective, it's probably not good, you know, for your parents to get divorced. So they are suffering an adversity, and lo and behold, as they get older, they're more likely to drink or use drugs. So that's what I would say. I say we need to look at society rather than looking at the family, basically. But of course, things going wrong in the family does inform not just drug addiction. The CDC proved that. It also, people who have diseases like bronchitis or heart disease, or they become obese or so on, they are more likely to have had adversity in childhood also. So
among your numerous experiences, what do you consider had the most impact on you when it comes to your addiction that led you to turn a new leaf?
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss an episode by clicking the subscribe button now. This podcast is possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
Without a doubt, an individual, another man, who will go by the name of Big Jim, who was my mentor. And I honestly do think, you know, obviously I joined support groups, like 12-step support groups, like Narcotics Anonymous. And I did therapy and all those sorts of things. But I think the single biggest intervention was having a personal mentor who took me through that process, who was about 14 years older than me and somebody I would respect. So he's quite a tough guy, but also very intelligent, very well read. And we formed a very close friendship that was a mentoring relationship, where he helped me to get work. And he said, have you read this book? Have you read that book? And he'd phone me up every day and say, you're still clean? You haven't used, have you? You haven't used drugs? And I had to be accountable to him because I respected him. And there were a lot of things I didn't know in life because I hadn't had a father that he helped me to overcome. Simple things like how to fix a car engine or how to apply for a job, things like that. So skills that I was lacking. But it was, I think it was the accountability, not wanting to let down a person that I'd actually respected. So having somebody that you respect come into your life who expects certain things of you and holds you accountable to them, but it also shows you how to do things that you don't know how to do, which on my part, of course, occasioned needing to be teachable. You know, I wouldn't have been able to receive that help if I wasn't ready. But I was more than ready. So that's the other part of it, is you really, to some extent, have to have hit the bottom with your bad behaviors or your unhelpful behaviors or your not being the best me, if you like. You need to really be done with that, right? If there's a little bit left where you're holding on to, oh, I'd like to not be quite the best me. I'd still like to go out and drink heavily sometimes. Well, don't be surprised if you don't become the best you then. Because you have to ask yourself, what are you prepared to do? What lengths are you prepared to go to? And that is one of the questions that, say, for example, Narcotics Anonymous and Big Jim posed to me. Are you prepared to go to any lengths to be the best you, effectively, which is to not be a drug addict and start to thrive? And my answer to that was yes, I will go to any lengths. You know, short of jumping off this cliff because you told me to, I will literally go to any lengths. And that is what it took.
Can you recall one particular statement that Big Jim actually told you that changed you?
Yeah. Yeah, I can. And it might sound funny, and maybe your listeners will identify with this, some of them. I had a lot of anger that was misplaced. In particular, a lot of it was directed at my mother, who, as I've just already explained, was probably the more positive influence in my life, although I didn't like what she was saying a lot of the time because she was complaining about and had boundaries around my bed. She had expectations of me. So I didn't like that. Okay. Whereas my father was not as helpful to me, but also didn't care if I got into trouble. So inappropriately, I was more angry with my mum. Right. And I would complain about her a lot to Jim. And then one day he said to me, God, you don't half complain about your mum a lot. And it shamed me. And when I say shamed me, I mean in a good way. You know, not in a way that I probably should have been felt a little bit ashamed, because it wasn't a noble way of behaving. And I was so mortified by that, that I made a decision right there and then to never complain about my mother or indeed my parents to anybody after that point, but to do what I had to do and take total personal responsibility for the fact that my life had gone wrong. And that revolutionized my relationship with both of them, actually, but mostly with my mother. So that was a major turning point. And that's all he had to say.
Tell me about your journey to Chiang Mai. What brought you there? And how did you start from scratch? Because most of the time, people have this perception that when you're an addict, you're automatically branded that it would be very difficult for you to start all over again, that there's no more hope, that you'd be considered as an outcast by the society. How did you beat all those and what transpired from it?
Well, there's a great phrase that can answer that basically, which is something like, where other people abdicate responsibility. So in other words, when other people, in a place where other people don't want to take responsibility, there is opportunity. So in London, nobody wanted to do street outreach work with drug addicts, because it's dangerous, difficult, and poorly paid. I had no CV, no resume, as you rightly say. How on earth am I going to turn my life around when I'm 28 and I have not worked? Well, the answer to that is to go to a place where no one else wants to go. So a charity in North London had been advertising this job for a long time, and it wasn't that poorly paid. It was okay pay, but it wasn't great for London. And no one wanted to do it. And you can understand why to an extent, apart from the fact that I had the exact skill set to do that difficult job. And so I found an opportunity where other people had abdicated responsibility. And I went into that job and did a damn good job. So I would do extra hours, and I was particularly enthused and passionate about it. And I did that for 5, 6, 7 years, that kind of work. So that's how I built up my skill set, is by going where no one else wanted to go and making the most of it, making a good fist of it, as we say in English. And then, of course, that led me to I became frustrated, and in a sense, I had to start again, because after 7 years, I thought I can do more than this now. But I wasn't growing. There were no opportunities because it was a public sector job, government funded. So there was a kind of a ceiling on how much I could progress. You know, there was a certain route. You have to become a manager and then this, that, and the other. So I was looking around for a long time because I thought, what am I going to do that's better than this? And then I literally saw an ad in a newspaper that I never usually read. One day I went into a shop. I never read newspapers. I was so bored. I bought a newspaper and I saw an advert for a job to manage a rehab in Thailand. And I knew it was my job. I knew it instantly. No one else is going to get this job. This will be mine. And within 6 weeks, I was there. And then within probably another 6 weeks, I had made myself so indispensable that they had to vest me. They had to offer me shareholdings. Otherwise, I'd be liable to go to a competitor, because that's how fast I was driving the business forward. Because I decided this is what I must do now. And the guys, to their immense credit, then brought me in as an owner of the business. And that's how I became a shareholder in what turned out to be a multi-million dollar business, right? So I came from being more or less street homeless to working with those same street homeless people on a terrible public sector wage to becoming a rehab entrepreneur, really. And so my answer to the question is always go where other people won't go, or be prepared to. And when you get the break that you've been looking for, do not rest easy. That's the time to push. Yeah, so That would be my advice. Yeah.
What was the most difficult thing about, you know, embarking on building the biggest rehab in Chiang Mai, which is the cabin? Which was the most difficult thing there?
Yeah. Well, first of all, a practical thing, like leaving my 12-year-old daughter behind in England. Mm-hmm. And I've had multiple people since then, including my business partner, say I wouldn't have done that. And I know they wouldn't, but I did, but I would, because I had to. And we had the conversation, and it was very, very difficult. And as people who really do love each other do, she said, "Dad, you've got to go and do this." So that's a heck of a lot of maturity for a 12-year-old. And we have maintained our relationship over those 11 years. And now she's a trained social worker and a lifeguard on Brighton Beach and is everything that I would want her to be. And we speak regularly. You know, my experiences in life are now coming into their own for her. So we speak a lot now. And so that was the first barrier, is having to go through that horrendous kind of heartache. And sometimes when things are really big, you do have to make sacrifices that are that big, that are equally big to the opportunity. So that's the first thing. And secondly, would be actually practically getting up and running in Thailand. It was definitely a developing country 10 years ago. It's not really now, it's a middle income country now, but Thailand didn't have a lot of the infrastructure. So, you know, getting doctors on board, getting licensing, you know, I think we had to be part and parcel of getting an act of parliament passed in order to get a specific rehab license, because there weren't specific rehabs in Thailand in those days. There were only psychiatric hospitals for addicts. So it was changing the stigma and changing, it was a paradigm shift in how people perceived addicts in Thailand. That was probably the most difficult bit, yeah. Helping to change the mindset, yeah.
And you did it very well. And right now you're creating yet another shift. I believe that you have a new venture called Alpha Sober Living. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so I left the board of directors of the cabin in 2018. It was big by then, you know, and I went off to do other things, write a book, which I'm still writing three years later.
Yay!
You know how it is when you do these, they take a long time. But I missed the clinical work. So my wife and I set up a small bespoke sober house is what it is really. So a sober house is a house in a city that takes people who are leaving rehabs to keep them safe in that dangerous point where they leave rehab and they might drink or use drugs again. So they come and live in a house where they're watched and monitored and by people like me. And this sober house was specifically for men, and it focused on doing things like jujitsu and Muay Thai, so Thai boxing and things like that, and triathlon training. As we hit the COVID era, obviously a lot of the guys are from the UK and Australia, so they left to go home. And so we shifted to online, and then I started counseling again, which I hadn't really done for many years. And so now it is still a sober house. So as and when things open up, a lot of Australians tend to come to Thailand for rehab. So the sober house is an option for them for that difficult halfway shift when they're leaving rehab. They can come, especially if they're sports minded, they can do wrestling and jiu-jitsu and things like that. And, you know, I do online counseling through Alpha Sober Living. So in the Zoom era that we're in now, what I've found is that online counseling is really effective. You know, I used to be a bit skeptical about that sort of thing, but I think we've all realized that it's possible to do a hell of a lot online, right? And counseling is no exception. So I do sober coaching and addictions counseling online. I do specialize in men, but I do sometimes have female clients. And that's what I do now, as well as writing. Yeah.
I can't help but actually relate to that context, right? And you thought that online counseling wouldn't be as effective. I was just like that when I first started virtual coaching my clients, because I've been so used to doing face-to-face interactions with them, but then it's to work. You've gone such a long way from, you know, the person that you were before. How do you view that stage in your life right now? The one that you had before?
Yeah, so when I was in trouble, you mean, and when I wasn't thriving, how do I view that, you mean? I view it as a necessary part of my life. You know, I do not have any regrets on it. I'd be lying if I said that I had none, but I have very few. I have very few regrets about it. It had to happen. In order to make the me that is here now, I had to go through those things. I might not wish now that I had been through that, but I did. That was me. And now what you see is the product of that. So I wouldn't be me if I hadn't been through that. And I guess there are parts of me that are stronger because of having been through that. And that is the other thing that people sometimes miss. You know, people talk a lot about trauma and things like that. They don't talk so much about post-traumatic growth. They don't talk about what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. You know, and that I think in the field of psychology and counseling is something we need to talk more about, because it's true. You know, we are not fragile creatures, human beings. We are incredibly, we're not even resilient. We're more than resilient. We're anti-fragile. So we get better with mishandling. Not wine glasses. We don't smash when you drop us. And we're not even just resilient. We actually potentially can get stronger when you drop us. Right. So that is what I, and all the best people that I know, all the most accomplished people that I know have not had easy lives. So there's no point regretting it. Possibly should celebrate it. I mean, maybe that's going a bit far, but you get my point.
Yes. Tell me about not having an easy life. Can relate, definitely. I am speaking right now with one of the most inspiring and bravest people I've ever spoken with, simply because it's not easy to admit someone's, you know, not so good past, if you may actually call it as such. If we have listeners right now who might be struggling with their own addiction, of whatever kind it may be, what would be your message for them?
I guess it would be this. You know, society tells us always to trust our feelings and things like that. And there are times when that's appropriate. There are times when you get a gut instinct about something. Maybe your intuition, and maybe you should listen to it. But then there are other times when we're having feelings like, I don't want to do this. That is not necessarily a feeling that you should trust. Okay, then if you're addicted to drugs or you're addicted to anything, you know, you like to do it a bit too much and it is causing problems in your life and you've decided that you don't want those problems, then that has brought you to one singular conclusion, which is that you have to stop doing the thing. I suggest don't go the 99% route. Think about it, even ordinary people, think about it. You've decided that you will not eat sugar, but you're only doing the 98% rule. You have a bit of chocolate now and then. Guess what? Mm. How much harder does that make it?
I love chocolates.
Unbelievably difficult. It wasn't worth it. Go the 100% route. Take that thing. Now, with things like alcohol and some certain pills like benzodiazepines, you have to be careful. You should not go cold turkey off of alcohol if you've been drinking for a long time. There are certain medical concerns, but you should seek to eventually become abstinent in that drug for at least a time period, and preferably forever, because who needs it? Who needs a chemical to make ourselves feel better? And it will be difficult and you won't want to do it, but you've already admitted you don't want this life. So in order to get a better life, that is what's standing in your way. So you ask yourself, what do I want? Do I want this beer or this joint of cannabis, or do I want that life that I haven't got? And which one do I want most? And if it's the life, then the drugs have got to go. And it won't be easy, but it will get better. It will definitely get better. So that would be my advice.
You've achieved so much in the last couple of years. What's next for you, Alistair?
Well, several things. You know, I speak quite a lot. I do quite a lot of public speaking, but I haven't published a book yet. I've got some possibilities that could occur. So I'm putting quite a lot of effort into publishing a book. I'm also looking at how blockchain, which is the technology behind cryptocurrencies, can facilitate greater behavioral health. So one of the things that we've noted is that if we can bring on board big stakeholders like the British NHS, the National Health Service, and say, look, if you build a cryptocurrency, a health ecosystem, and reward people for stopping smoking, research shows that people will stop smoking if they're rewarded. So you make payments to people for doing good things like stopping smoking, right? Small cryptocurrency payments. So that's one example of a large public health campaign that you could use technology to, you know, pretty much bring about an end to smoking maybe in the long term. So things like that, you know, sort of slightly bigger things. But also I am still looking at rehab projects. And I'm very interested in what's happening in research with psychedelics. So funnily enough, things like ibogaine, which is in itself a hallucinogenic drug, but which is being used to detoxify heroin addicts. So things we would have once thought were a bit dangerous are now being shown by big universities like Johns Hopkins University in America to be really effective at helping heroin addicts and also soldiers and veterans who've got PTSD. So maybe there's some plant medicines or some plant wisdom from the tribal ancestors that they knew what they were doing with some of these plant medicines. And maybe there are some answers in there that we don't know about yet. So I'm really interested in that area. Probably slowly but surely going in that direction. Adventure is the...
Wow, exciting plans indeed. Yeah. I'm sure that there would be a lot of listeners who would want to get in touch with you. How can they reach you?
Well, my website is www.alphasoberliving.com, and alpha is as in alpha and omega, A-L-P-H-A, alphasoberliving.com. My Instagram is the same, alphasoberliving.com. My Twitter and Facebook are under my name, which is Alistair Mordy, which has a particular spelling. Alistair is A-L-A-S-T-A-I-R, and Mordy is M-O-R-D-E-Y. So my Facebook and Twitter are under Alistair Mordy.
I'd like to end this wonderful interview by going back to what you just said earlier, that when you were starting, you were looking for that adventure. How does that adventure look right now?
Well, amazing, because it involves other people. So this is the other side of the adventure, is it has to be on behalf of your people, your society, your tribe, your culture, or all cultures and all peoples. Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing if you were a person who could help all peoples, right? But the adventure, if you think about it, if you think about a hero, and I'm not saying I'm one, but I think it's what people should try to be. It's what all our best stories are about. And us not trying is why we get addicted. So if you were going to do something heroic, what would be heroic? And what would be an adventure? Doing something brave? No, if you just did something brave to get a thrill, that's not very impressive. Doing something brave that puts you in danger, but that benefits society, is what heroes and adventurers do. So that's how I've always tried to go in that direction. Whatever I do, it has to be of service. It has to be helping in some way, not damaging in some way. And if it is adventurous and a little bit risky, so much the better. But we only really truly get meaning through being of service. That's what I would say.
There you have it. Thank you for sharing your, you know, one great adventure. I look forward to seeing you, you know, embark on new ones anytime soon. And I do hope that you get to inspire a lot of our listeners with regards to their battle against addiction and how to move on and forward from such experience. Thank you for accommodating my request for your interview.
Thanks, Mike. It's been great to be here. Yeah, and I'm very approachable. Anybody, they want to talk, they want to ask me anything, hit me up on any of those mediums and I will reply. Yeah. So thanks, Mike, again, for inviting me on. It's been a pleasure.
And there you have it, guys. So once again, that was Alistair Mordy, the founder of the Cabin Chiang Mai, the largest rehab in Thailand, and Alpha Sober Living, online counseling service and sober house. And for you guys who would want to reach him, you already know his website and his social media accounts, so feel free to do so. And if you like this episode, feel free to like and share thereafter. And you can reach me via my social media pages indicated in my website at www.coach-mikesellis.com. Again, my usual reminder to all of you guys, wherever you are right now, it's okay, simply because you're on your way to become your own hashtag best me ever. My name is Coach Mike Sellis. Bye.
This podcast is brought to you by Guerrilla Podcast Syndicate, powered by Kangaroo Fern Media Lab. Kangaroo Fern is Australia's independent video and podcast management agency with the mission to help individuals and entrepreneurs to start their own podcast and harness the power of podcasting. Book now via www.kangaroofern.com. We are Independent Podcast Network. We are Guerrilla Podcast Syndicate. Would you like to hear your brand while supporting quality podcasts? Contact us now at advertise@guerrillapodcastsyndicate.com.